So let's finish out. You mentioned the Lung Master Protocol, and of course, Dr. Gandara, who wrote that editorial we're talking about before, was one of the leading forces in this, and the whole idea of trying to target squamous cell. You mentioned some of the other approaches, but we pulled out the Lung Cancer Master Protocol and several trials that came out, one that you already referred to. But can you talk a little bit about the way it was set up and executed?
So I think this was a phenomenal effort. And I think it required, particularly in squamous cell lung cancer, where the incidence is declining a bit, I think it required this effort by a cooperative group to get all the centers together and do this study. So very simply, this originally started with sort of doing on every patient NGS testing. And if specific genetic alterations were identified in patients who had previously been treated with platinum-based chemotherapy, they were randomized to either targeted therapy or docetaxel. Very quickly, they changed the study design, and I think rightly so, to make it where it was a single-arm study where they only got the genetically altered, because many of these patients had also been treated with second line. And I don't think that there was, at least in the initial exploratory phase, there was a need to do randomized study. And so the way the study was that if a promising activity was seen, then subsequently a randomized study could be done to truly assess the benefit. We have data on approximately three different. There is also immunotherapy data from that study. But as far as targeted therapy is concerned, there is data regarding sort of three specific agents. One is the FGFR inhibitor I mentioned, AZD4547. The other is a PI3 kinase inhibitor, and the third is a CDK4/6 inhibitor. So what's interesting is that the cyclin pathway, which I know oncologists are using CDK4/6 inhibitors in breast cancer patients now fairly routinely, but these cyclin pathways are significantly altered either because of loss of cyclin such as P16 that regulates cell cycle, or upregulation of, say, cyclin D1 or cyclin 4 and 6 that sort of accelerates the cell cycle. And what they found, both with the CDK4/6 palbociclib as well as the PI3 kinase inhibitor, that the responses were very limited. I think specifically with regards to the CDK4/6 inhibitor, it's not surprising that the response rate was low. These are mainly cytostatic agents. But I think even in breast cancer, they're commonly used in combination with hormonal agents. And so it is possible that if we combine it with other agents, maybe cytotoxic chemotherapy or other such agents, that we may see even better benefit. So I think what these studies have shown is that this is feasible, that you can enroll a lot of squamous cell lung cancer patients after their tumors have been genomically defined and assess the activity of these drugs. But I think they've also taught that the genomically, at least, these tumors are a lot more complex than, say, the EGFR and ALK and ROS1 tumors. And I think we'll have to be smarter and look at more combination treatments in the future, even if a specific target has been identified.
You know, it's funny, you're talking about these trials like the MAP study made me kind of think back to, I think it was called the Battle study. I think it was Roy Herbst did it at MD Anderson, a bunch of other people. And I don't remember how long ago it was, but I don't think it was that long ago, but I just remember that it was so radical, that idea. You know, it was controversial, the idea of biopsying somebody who has metastatic disease and then tailoring the therapy. And they had it. I think in the beginning, there was a lot of resistance to the concept. And now it's like standard care.
Yeah. And in fact, now if you don't biopsy and get the molecular alterations, and frankly, now in EGFR and ALK patients, not only biopsy at diagnosis, but then subsequently to define the resistance pattern, and that might direct your treatment. So yes, we've come a long way. And of course, now we have blood-based tumor DNA analysis as well. So that makes it a little more easy. Though I will say that we should still do tumor analysis, because there are some limitations to blood-based analysis. And I think it helps when we get a result. But I think the simple thing to remember is if the result is negative in a blood-based analysis, that does not mean a particular alteration doesn't exist in the tumor. And so the simple rule to follow is that if you identify an alteration, fine, you can act on it. But if you don't identify, don't forget to do a biopsy and get the tumor analyzed.
Well, there's also the issue of convenience, obviously, with a liquid biopsy, and also the fact that it's more current, you know. But if you do a liquid biopsy, for example, how likely is it that you'll pick up these sort of HER2 alterations or herb alterations we're talking about?
So mutations, I think it is still possible, but I think what is the limitation with the blood-based, many of the blood-based tests, and I think they are improving, is that it is hard to identify amplifications, it is hard to identify fusions in these. So there are certain limitations. Of course, not to mention, we are seeing, even now with immunotherapy, histologic switches. So we very well know about small cell transformation in EGFR and even sometimes in ALK. There are also reports of switch from adenocarcinoma to squamous cell carcinoma. And so in the right setting, even though you may have access to blood-based testing, I think there are certain advantages of doing tumor biopsies.
For sure.